Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Azamallahu ajurana wa ajurakum bi musabina bil Husayn alayhi salam wa ja'alna wa iyyakum min at-talibin bi istarihi ma waliyahi al-imam al-mahdi min al Muhammad alayhi salam. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala double our rewards on account of our sorrow for the martyrdom of Al-Husayn, peace be upon him, and may he include you and us with those who shall take revenge upon his killers with his blood clamor, Imam al-Mahdi ajalla wa ta'ala farajahu sharif, who belongs to the household of Muhammad, and peace be upon them all. Thank you for joining us today. The day of Ashura is upon us. It was a night like this 1381 years ago when Imam Husayn alayhi salam asked the Kurds army of Yazid Mangdulale to give him one more night to worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala some more. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us the tawfiq, give us the ma'rifah of Allah Abdullah alayhi salam, and enable us to follow his footsteps, inshallah. It feels so strange not being at Idara though. We would have been gathering at Idara to give Kursa to Bibi Fatima Zahra Salamullah alayha, Imam of our time at this time. Well, since we are at our homes because of reasons that are out of our control, I would like to share a hadith from Imam Husayn Qasim alayhi salam. He said he should mourn over, he talked about mourning in our homes. He said he should mourn over Husayn alayhi salam, weep for him, and instruct the members of the house to weep for him. He should establish the mourning ceremony in the house by exhibiting lamentations and grief over him. The people should meet one another in their homes and offer condolences and consolation to each other over the calamities which befell him. So inshallah, to begin tonight's English program, I would like to request Brother Ali Shirazi to recite Hadith 6. Brother Ali.
Salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Fatima al-Zahra, the daughter of the Prophet, peace be upon them, is to have thus related an event. My father, the Prophet of Allah, came to my house one day and said to me, peace be upon you, Fatima. I replied, and upon you be peace. Then he said, I feel weakness in my body. I said, Allah protects you from weakness, Father. He said, Fatima, please bring Yemeni cloak and cover me with it. So I brought the Yemeni cloak and covered him with it. Then I looked at him and saw that his face was shining like a full moon with its glory and splendor. After a while, my son Hassan came in and said, peace be upon you, mother. I replied, and upon you, peace, O light of my eyes and the light of my heart. He then said, mother, I smell a fragrance so sweet and so pure as that of my grandfather, the Prophet of Allah. I replied, yes, your grandfather is lying underneath the cloak. Hassan went near the cloak and said, peace be upon you, my grandfather, the Prophet of Allah. May I enter the cloak with you? He replied, and upon you, peace, my son, and the master of my fountain. You are given the permission to enter. So Hassan entered the cloak with him.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
After a while, my Husayn came in and said, peace be upon you, mother. And I replied, and upon you, peace, O light of my eyes and the light of my heart. He then said, mother, I smell a sweet fragrance like that of my grandfather, the Prophet of Allah. I replied, yes, your grandfather and your brother are lying underneath the cloak. Husayn stepped towards the cloak and said, peace be upon you, my grandfather, the chosen of Allah. May I enter the cloak with you? He replied, and upon you, peace, my son, and intercessor of my followers. You are given permission to enter. So Husayn entered the cloak with them.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
After a while, Abu Hassan ibn Ali ibn Abi Talib came in and said, "Peace be upon you, O daughter of the Prophet of Allah." I replied, "And upon you, peace, O father of Hassan and the commander of the faithful." He then said, "Fatima, I smell a sweet fragrance like that of my brother, the Prophet of Allah." I replied, "Yes, he is underneath the cloak with your two sons." So Ali went near the cloak and said, "Peace be upon you, Prophet of Allah. May I enter the cloak with you?" He replied, "And upon you, peace, my brother, my legatee and my successor and my standard bearer. You are given the permission to enter." So Ali entered the cloak with them.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Then I stepped forward and said, "Peace be upon you, my father, O Prophet of Allah. May I enter the cloak with you?" He replied, "And upon you, peace, my daughter, O part of myself, you are given the permission to enter." So I entered the cloak with them.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Getting together underneath the cloak, my father and Prophet of Allah held the two ends of the cloak and raised his right hand toward the heavens and prayed, "O Allah, these are the people of my household. They are my confidence and my supporters. Their flesh is my flesh and their blood is my blood. Whoever hurts them hurts me too. Whoever displeases them displeases me too. I am at war with those at war with them. I am at peace with those at peace with them. I am the enemy of their enemies, and I am the friend of their friend. They are from me and I am from them. O Allah, bestow your blessings, benevolence, forgiveness, and your pleasure upon me and upon them, and remove impurity from them and keep them truly pure."
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Then the Lord of Almighty Allah said, "O my angel, O residents of my heavens, verily I have not created the erected sky, stretched earth, the illuminated moon, the bright sun, the rotating planets, the flowing seas, and the sailing ship, but for the love of these five lying underneath the cloak." Jibrail, the trusted angel, asked, who are under the cloak? The Almighty answered, they are the household of the Prophet and the assets of prophethood. They are Fatima, her father, her husband, and her two sons." Jibrail said, "O Lord, may I fly to earth to be the sixth of them?" Allah replied, "Yes, you are given the permission." Jibrail, the trusted, landed near them and said, "Peace be upon you, O Prophet of Allah. The All-Highest conveys his peace on you and his greetings and says, 'By my honor and glory, O my angels, O residents of my heaven, verily I have not created the erected sky, the stretched earth, the illuminated moon, the bright sun, the rotating planets, the flowing seas, and the sailing ships. But for your sake and love, God has given me permission to enter the cloak with you. May I join, O Prophet of Allah?" The Prophet replied, "And peace be upon you, O trusted bearer of Allah's revelations. You are granted the permission." So Jibrail entered the cloak with us and said to my father, "Allah sends his revelations to you. Verily Allah's desire is to remove blemish from you, O Prophet, O people of household, and purify you with a perfect purification." Then Ali said to my father, "O Prophet of Allah, tell me what significance has Allah given for getting together underneath this cloak?" The Prophet replied, "Be by him who rightfully appointed me a prophet and chose me a messenger for the salvation of mankind, whenever and wherever an assembly of our followers and friends mention this event, Allah will bestow on them His blessing and mercy. Angels will encircle them, asking Allah the remission of their sins until the assembly disappeared. Ali said, "Verily, by the Lord of Kaaba, we and our followers are the winners." Then my father replied, "By Him who rightfully appointed me a prophet and chose me a messenger for the salvation of mankind, whenever and wherever an assembly of our followers and friends mentions this event, there shall remain no grief, but Allah will remove His grief. There shall remain none distressed, but Allah will dispel his distress. There shall remain no wish seeker, but Allah will grant his wish." Ali happily said, "Verily, by the Lord of Kaaba, we and our followers are the winners and the blessed in the world and in the next."
Allahumma
salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ala. Thank you so much, Brother Al-Shirazi, for the recitation. Next, I would like to request Sister Ayata Tathir Zahra to share poetry in honor of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Sister.
2, 3.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Rizan bi qazaihi wa tasliman li amri. Baby Ali Askar was only 6 months old in Karbala. He was the son of Imam Hussein in Rabat. On the day of Ashura, it was very hot, and there was no water for the family of the Imam. For 3 days, his mother could not feed him either, as there was no milk. When Imam called out, "Is there anyone to help me?" there was a loud crying from the ladies. The Imam came into the tent. Hazrat Zainab said, "Oh, my brother Hussein, since Askar heard your call, he has not stopped crying." The Imam said, "Bring him to me. I will take him and see if I can get some water." Rabab brought the baby, Ali Askar, from his crib and kissed him goodbye. Imam Ali Salam took the baby in his arms and, going to the army of Yazid, said, "See how thirsty my Askar is? His lips are dry, and he can hardly open his eyes. He has done no harm to anyone. Give him some water." Hearing this, some soldiers started to cry. But Umar Saad said to Hurmala, "Stop Hussein's words." Hurmala aimed an arrow at the baby's neck, and the arrow hit its mark, and the baby was killed in the arms of his loving father, Imam Hussein. The Imam kissed the baby, then took a step forward, and then went backward. He did this again and again, 7 times, saying, "Inna lillahi wa inna alayhi raji'un. Rizan bi qazaihi wa tasliman li amri. From Allah we come, and to Allah we return." He buried the baby with his own hands in the hot sand. Salawat.
Allahumma
salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Thank you so much, Sister Ayata Tathir, for sharing that narration from the day of Ashura. Now, inshallah, I would like to invite Maulana Ali Rahmat Razavi to guide us on to how to increase our marifa of Imam Hussain alayhi salam and Imam of our time, and help us strengthen our connection with the Imam, inshallah. Maulana Saab.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وعلى لبيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين الذين ذهب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا. أما بعد، قال الله الحكيم في كتابه الكريم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: ولقد كتبنا في الزبور من بعد الذكر أن الأرض يريثها عبادي الصالحون. صدق الله العلي العظيم. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. A series of discussions are slowly edging to an end. In the last couple of nights, we've looked at a particular tradition which states that in this particular era that we're going through, dhalal and dhulumat is spreading in such a way that it becomes very difficult at times for the believer to distinguish between haqq and batil. You see, it says in a tradition that one day Rasulullah was sitting with his companions. And at that stage, he said to them that, look, in this day and age, there's one haqq and there's one batil. But he says, O Jabir, in the end of times, there'll be butlan, multiple batils, and there'll be one haqq. It'll be very difficult for people to differentiate what the truth is and what the truth isn't. So the tradition says Jabir begins to cry. And he says, if I make it to that time, how will I differentiate between haqq and batil? So Rasulullah replies, he says, remember, haqq is like the sun. There can be multiple butlan, but when the sun shines, it extinguishes all other butlans. And so in this way, for those people who are searching truly, your heart tells you where haqq is. You know, many a time people do say that, look, even within our own denomination, we're finding contrasting things. Differences of opinion when it comes to knowledge isn't a bad thing. What is when there's corruption. And that corruption leads to people's aqidah becoming corrupt. For that, remember, don't go out for your own nafs, that because this is in line and this makes my life easier, therefore I'm going to take this pathway. Look and see where your heart settles when it comes to the truth. And the truth is like the sun many a time. In the same way, when Rasulullah says, sitting there, he says, Salam on my brothers. So the Ashab asks, are we not your brothers? He says, no, you're my companions, but you're not my brothers. My brothers are those people who are coming in the last days, who have not seen me, who have not seen me. But at the same time, they have iman, they have faith on me. Now this hadith itself, if you take it as an individual hadith, is sufficient to actually emphasize the superiority of those people in the last days who are believers above and beyond the Sahaba itself. And this is in a Shia tradition I'm narrating, it's a Sunni tradition. That those people who are truly on the faith, on the pathway, their maqam is greater than the ashab. And again, it's a discussion. And this is why there's no second to the Ahlul Bayt. Everything after that is extrapolation from tradition as to who's afdal. The bottom line is this: the greatest of all after Ahlul Bayt are the 72 in Karbala. And of course, Salman being at the 10th level of Iman, or Abu Dhar, or Miqdad. And contrasting that are the Sahabi, or the Ashab of the Mahdi alayhi salam. Remember one thing, Uwais Qarani never saw the Prophet. But his ishq and his connection with the Prophet raised him to a rank which is far more loftier for us anywhere Shia. If you put Amir al-Mu'mineen to one side, all of Ashra and Mubashira, because for us that hadith is not sahih. Always Qarani's maqam is greater than all of them. So what you find is, when people say, Shia don't believe in the Sahaba? Shia believe in the Sahaba. Of course they do. The difference is they have different stations. And that's where the difference comes in. So anyhow, moving forward, when we are in this particular stage, you find that when materialism increases, spirituality decreases. When spirituality decreases, it doesn't mean that people's thirst for spirituality stops. If you look in the 20th century and the 21st century being an extension of that, as materialism has spread and we've become extremely individualistic, going after money, and to be honest, money isn't a bad thing. It's when money possesses you. This is why the tradition says that in the last days, there are six things that are going to happen to the Shia. And some they say nine and more, up to 50. But one of them is this. When the believer's qibla becomes money, meaning what? All of his focus is towards one thing. And a time like that is coming, and a time like that is here, to be honest. You look around the world, the vast majority of people are running towards money. If you have money, you have status in society. Now whatever society does, it shouldn't impact on the Shia, but today the Shia are like that. There's some centers in the world where you go that the people who lift up the alam, for example, are people who are of monetary value in their communities. Those people sitting on the boards, to those people on the front lines. Inshallah, it doesn't happen in our communities, but the fact is that there are places in the world that I've seen myself that is like that. There are places in the world where the front line is reserved for those people who have money. Already Imam alayhi salam is saying that a time like that will come. That when the Shias become like that, know then there's a problem. The reason being is this, that you lose your protection. The only thing Qibla should be is Kaaba or Allah. But look, when all of this happens, and when people are going for fame and fortune, it still doesn't fulfill their internal requirements. And for this reason, what do you find? You find that in the 20th century, people who became celebrities ran after spirituality. A huge movement in the West started, be it Hare Krishna, be it later on Kabbalah, be it Sufism, whatever you may call it, different spiritualities popped up. And the purpose of the New Age movements, which took bits from here, bits from here, bits from here. The purpose? Because people were feeling empty. Any form of authentic spirituality is a struggle itself. The best example I can give you is this. Sometimes you go to somebody when you're sick, and they give you a medicine, and it needs 7 to 10 days to run its course. And then you go to someone, they give you an injection, and within 5 minutes you're okay. You don't realize somebody's pumped you up with steroids. Superficially, you feel that you're doing well. But the fact is that 10 days or 7 days is required for a holistic movement to be able to rectify whatever issues there are inside. The same thing, what you find is that people are looking for a quick fix. And in the 21st century, and as the Dhuhr gets closer, you will find many false types of mysticism and spirituality. The reason why I say this is this, because we've just discussed in the last couple of nights the concept of spirituality. Be very aware as well that there are also false types of spirituality where people are going to give you quick fixes so that you feel high. There's no quick fix. Remember, the first primacy is Sharia. You must pray, you must fast, you must go on Hajj, you must give zakat. These are the tenets, these are the principles. If a person is not going to Hajj, if they're not praying on time, if they're not reciting Salat al-Layl, if they're not reciting Ziyarat al-Ashura or Ziyarat al-Waritha, whichever it may be, the fact of the matter is that if you just follow what's been recommended to you, it's sufficient enough for you to get to that maqam. When people think about spirituality, they think about power, they think about control, they think about dominance. So remember, not every person who claims to be spiritual is spiritual. Even within this, in the same way as when you go into medicine, not everybody's a general practitioner. They're experts from one thing to another thing. From bones, to lungs, to liver, to heart, to brain, to your neural system. In the same way within spirituality, there's much more than that. So when you look around and you see somebody calculating something for somebody, telling the present, past, or future doesn't make you spiritual. It's a science. If somebody, see, remember one thing, there's two things. One is the study of Irfan. One is the study of the occult. Don't ever conflate both of those things. Just because somebody is an Arif, doesn't mean you can go to him and ask him that I want a solution to this. It's possible he may have, he may not have. The purpose of that RF is to take you to God. He's not going to care about your problems because he knows that these are juz'i. When David, the prophet, goes to a particular lady, he says, your maqam is so high that Allah has said that you're going to be my neighbor in heaven. So he asks, and the lady replies, she says, but there's nothing special about me. He says, you must be doing something. So she says, whenever a problem befalls, I wait patiently for Allah's relief. I don't cry. I don't even pray for it to go away, actually. What I do is I wait for Allah's relief. I follow the mashiyat of Allah. He says, because of that, Allah's put you at that maqam. So look, urafa generally are not the business to come to you and say, I'm going to give you a solution. They give you a solution of the heart. They give you a solution for your stage and your status so that your maqam can rise. Not saying that there aren't urafa who wouldn't be able to help you. Again, these are two different fields though. Ulum al-Ghariba is something else. For example, the mother of Ulum al-Ghariba, the occult, is Najum, astrology. Why? Because through astrology, there's multiple different things to be worked out. And I don't want to go into a discussion in astrology or any of the occult sciences. I'm just giving you an outline because there's a conclusion I want to get to. You may see somebody who's warid in ilm Raml. Raml was taught by what? Who? Daniel. It goes back to Daniel, Daud, and the entire silsila of Bani Israel. There are certain ulum which were specific with Bani Israel which have been passed down to us. The only authentic one which is only reserved for us is ilm Jaf. Right? And all of these things have their time and their place. If somebody's writing a ta'wiz, they're doing a murabba, whatever it may be, this is all occult. This has nothing to do with true spirituality to get to Allah. Maybe there's a time and a place for that. Maybe there's a solution which is required for somebody for that to be done. But essentially, Irfan is different from that. And I think that's one thing that we need to differentiate. Just because somebody's writing something doesn't make him an arif billah. Many people who are coming into this valley, their niyyah is not correct. So there's another section of ulum al-ghariba as well. Taskhir, domination of the people. Jinn, imps, over a situation. You must remember, that's not Irfan either. Or for example, somebody knows numerology, that's not Irfan. To be able to control, possess, that's not Irfan. What is? Irfan is a ma'rif of Allah. It's two different things. So bear that in mind. When you go into the valley of spirituality, if you're looking for somebody to teach you, these are not the ways of teaching. You can't sit down all of a sudden, open up Bahrul Gharaib and think you can recite all of the dhikrs in there as well. Now remember, the fine line here is this, between ulum al-ghariba and otherwise, you'll find some people give out the names of God. Now surely this can't be the occult, but this must be something in relation to solving our problems. In the same way, verses of the Qur'an. Yes, why? Qur'an is a shifa. There are verses of the Qur'an. You open it up and you see. For example, Surah Waqi'ah. Surah Waqi'ah recited at a particular time is meant to increase rizq. In the same way, Surah Fatiha, recited a particular amount of times, is meant to cure you. In the same way, Surah Mulk, if you want to die on the pathway, you recite that. In the same way, and I can go on, if a person has a debt, there's particular surahs that you should be reciting. One of them, for example, Surah Muzammil. So we can go on in depth. You have an enemy, there's a surah you can recite there a particular amount of times. Surah Fil, and so forth. So the idea is this, is that Irfan? Actually, that's not Irfan either. Yes, it can take you to a level. Why? Because remember, your intention is to resolve your problem. Your problem is worldly, right? But the reason why this is important is because then the urafa who have spiritual problems use the very same things in a different methodology to be able to remove those spiritual diseases. What are spiritual diseases? Lying, backbiting, cheating, uncertainty, lack of faith. All of these things, spiritual vices, the same verses, the names in the Quran are used in a particular way to cure that as well. So for that then, it requires a doctor which is elevated above and beyond ulum al-ghariba. But at the same time, ijaz is required. I'll give you an example. Let's say you go to Bahr al-Gharaib And there's so many athkar in there. You can't just open it up and start reading. Why? Because you've got to be amil of the amal to be able to give it, to be able to use it, and etc. There's sharait and shurut. All of those sharait and shurut are never written in these books. You can't go into Shams al-Ma'arif, for example, and just start. The conditions are not there. The reason being is that the person writing knows that it can be used wrongly by somebody. They don't put the conditions in. When they don't put the conditions in, then what happens? Then it doesn't work for you, or if it does, it backfires on you. So therefore, a true spiritual master can give you all the sharait. Is this irfan though? Actually, it's not. Why isn't it irfan as such? Because irfan, when used with the intention of ma'rifatullah, is a difference there. But surely then we need to resolve the differences in our life first before to get that. Yes, agreed. And then the next question comes, okay, if I want to go into the Valley of Irfan, where do I find somebody? Now remember, if you go into history, and I'm not going to tell you how, where, how, but let's just look at it in one. In history, what you find is that the Imams taught people certain knowledge. The entire Sufi tariqats, which you find, developed around the Imams. All of the Sufi tariqats go back to an Imam. All of the mainstream Sufi tariqats go back to the Aim alayhi salam. Right? What was the purpose of that? It was a methodology towards God. Today when you look at, and by the way, there were Shia tariqats, there were Sunni tariqats. The biggest Shia tariqat, Safavis. Safiuddin Ardabili, who was also an alim as well, but he was a Sufi in that respect. Entire Iran became Shia because of Sufi Shias. Essentially, the Darwish. And after that, there have been many Sufi tariqats as well, which are Shia, and which are Sunni, right? In this modern day and age, it's more like a gang or a club. And it's fine, people get together, they do a bit of Allah, Allah, they feel better. But the fact is, the purpose in those days was to give you tarbiyah. So what happens? The school of Irfan comes along. What is the school of Irfan? The school of Irfan essentially is really the tasawwuf of the ulama. Meaning what? Meaning to become kamil and complete, you have to know Sharia. You have to know the hudud of Sharia. So when you look at somebody like Sayyid Mahdi Bahra al-Ulum, what are they? Marja. But they're also Arif. What's Ayatullah Bahjid? Marja. What is he? Arif. So what are they teaching? They're teaching first and foremost, understand the Sharia so that you don't do anything to violate God's law. And then after that, what's most important for you to do? Then from there, there's a guidance that takes place. And these ulama who are orafa as well, they give you the complete package essentially. This is where the school of Irfan comes from. Develop it forward. Is every alim an arif? No. Do they have their own chains? Yes, they do. Today, if you go to Qum, you've got this chain of Allama Tabatabai. Does it need a chain that it becomes like a Sufi tariqat? Well, there are many chains with it. Remember one thing, Irfani chains are not one either within Qum and Najaf. Remember one thing, Sayyid Mahdi Bahra al-Ulum was from the chain of Bidabadi, Muhammad Bidabadi. There's an entire chain which is coming. Sayyid Ali Qadhi also had experience from the Bidabadi chain, but he himself is from that line of Sayyid Muhammad Shushtari. So they're different levels and different lines as well. This Sayyid Ali Qadhi line, whose teacher was Ahmad Karbalai and Khuli Hamadani and Muhammad Ali Shushtari, goes back to Mullah Jula. It's a different line altogether. But look, rather than complicate things, the reason why I'm saying is that different strands of spirituality as well. Not every scholar is an arif. Not every scholar is kamil to be able to take you by the hand and take you up. So what do you do in that situation? Let's say, look, you're living in New York. You're living in London. You're living in Edinburgh. You're living in Sydney. What do you do? Remember one thing. There is enough in Sharia that if you do what's the halal of Allah and you refrain from the haram, which the muharramats, it is sufficient for God to open up a pathway. I'll give you an example. Today I was speaking to a friend of mine who's a mujtahid, sahib an-nazar, a person who for 30 years studied the sciences. Somebody who Ayatollah Wahid al-Khurasani to me said, this guy is sahib an-nazar. That person said to me that, and again, Ayatollah Wahid is probably the biggest marja in Qum at the moment. So we were having a discussion and he was telling me about how some of the ulama in India became spiritual and how they became, or they came onto this pathway. So he gave an example of his grandfather. He said, my grandfather went to Shaheed Thalis's mazar Qadi Nurullah Shushtari. He said when he went there, he became a khadim over there. Also his grandfather was an alim, but he became a khadim to serve at the shrine of the Sayyid, Shayda Thalif. And he says that for 40 days, everything is in the hadith, right? What do? Refrain from sin, recite Salatul Layl, for example. Pray your prayers awwala waqt. Ayatullah Bahjat says, a person who prays awwala waqt taqweenan, Allah will raise them. So he did all of this. So what happened? In a mukashifa, in a vision or in a dream, Shayda Thalis comes to him, gives him a dhikr. Now he starts that for 40 days. Again, there's a development that takes place. Remember, in the same way, when you go into YouTube, YouTube knows which of the searches of yours you're doing the most, so it gives you a recommendation. The same thing. Let's say, for example, you're a businessman. At the moment, we're going through COVID-19. You're in the PPE industry. At the beginning, when you started, you had no clue. Now you know what 3M masks are. Now you know what KN95 is. Now you know what FFP2 and 3 is. And then after that, you went into gloves. So let's say you know what, for example, Hartlager is, V-glove, top glove. And then after that, this is Kimberly Clark gloves. And you know the prices, and you know what stock it is, and you know what this is. And slowly you start building up. Why? Because it's the network and the circle. Within 3 months, you're an expert. In the same way within this, you do a dhikr, you purify yourself, something comes to you. And then all of a sudden, you find the right people start coming. You become like a magnet. Why? On top of your search are these people. So people start coming to you. And throughout your life, when you require it the most, either through a vision, a dream, or some people go to Amir al-Mu'mineen, some people find a dhikr, and in this way, slowly but surely, you start developing yourself. This is why the Quran says, اتَّقُوا wa يُعَلَّمَكُمْ Allah. Allah teaches a person. You don't need to go to a person. You just need to observe the rules and the regulations that Allah says. There is enough within Shi'ism. One tasbih of Fatima al-Zahra alayhi salam is so powerful that it's sufficient enough as a guide for you. But do the things which are wajib on you to do. Do the things which have been recommended. As all of the ulama have said, pray awwala waqt. If you have a big issue and you really want to get into this valley of Irfan, because so many people have been messaging and saying, how do we get involved? What can we do? How do we do this? I know this Pir Sahib. I know this Murshid. You don't need any of that. All you need is your Rasala Amaliyah. What do you need to do? Pray awwala waqt. You want to pray more than that? Khufayla. You want to pray more than that? Salatul Layl. You want to pray more than that? Istighfar, Salawat. And then after that you see, within 40 days of refraining from Muharramat, Nur of Allah comes. The wa'ada of Allah is there. Ittaqullah wa yu'allamakum Allah. You'll see that slowly but surely things start opening to you. That's what's important. You don't need to join some kind of an order. Yes, they may have things passed down to them, but how do you know they're Kamil? Today, a lot of things are being done because of the dunya. And especially those people who are from the subcontinent. Every single person's a peer or peerzada. All of them are empty. Just because you possess one jinn or mawakkil doesn't make you anything. See? A true peer or peerzada never comes out. And then the idda'a that I'm connected to the 12th Imam and this Mukashifa I saw. True person who's for Allah doesn't do that. There's no idda'a there. He quietly gets along with what he needs to do. He or she knows. You see, they say there are 360 servants of the Imam. At any given time, they're helpers of the Imam. One dies, another one replaces. People like that are there in this world who know and they see and they look. And they've been given the responsibility by the Imam to come and say, do this. They themselves search. This line of Qadi that I was telling you about that goes to Mullah Chula, when asked the question to Mullah Chula, how did you get here? He says it was one of the Na'ibin of the Imam that I thought was just a normal person who at the end of his life guided me. How? Mullah Chula was an alim in Kashan who was responsible for his masjid. He says one day what happened was that a soldier came. And that soldier's duty was to serve the community, and it was a time where the soldier was required for peace. And when he came, the first thing he did was he found me, and he said to me, listen, I'm going to give you money. I want you to go and prepare food, and I'm going to come and take that food every evening from you. Why? Because where I'm staying, I don't think that there's any inclination of what taharat, najasat, halal and haram is. So Mullah Chula was thinking, you know, this guy's a soldier and he's coming to me. So he says, every night I used to prepare bread for him, naan for him. He said, a night came where he came to me and he said, leave the mosque open, I'm going to worship. At 1 o'clock at night time, there's going to be a knock on the door. There's going to be two men, and you'll see, you'll recognize them because there's going to be nur on their face. They're going to tell you that I've died. You should go with them and help them to give me ghusl and kafan, and then after that pray prayer over my body. Prior to 1 o'clock, don't disturb me. Mullah Jula says, oh my God. So he waits. 1 o'clock comes, knock on the door comes, two men are there, both of the men say, come. This soldier has died, ghusl and kafan. Mullah Jula said, I grabbed this guy's foot. I said, listen, who is this guy who died? For me, he was just a normal person. But then, from what he was doing, I realized he's something special, but who is he? So these two men reply. He said he had a responsibility from the 12th Imam that he was fulfilling. So Mullah Jula then says, he says, look, I want this responsibility. Can you take me to him? He says, okay. We'll take you to him, then after that is yours. So they took him. Apparently there was a tent there. And he goes inside. And there was a man standing there. And he says, this was the most nurani moment of my life. And this man says to him, do you want the position of that soldier? Mullah Chula says, initially I didn't understand. He said, but I'm not a warrior. I'm not young anymore. He said, no, do you want his position? And hence I got his position. After that, Ayatullah said, Ali Shushtari says, Muhammad Ali Shushtari says, he says that when he was the Qadi, this is how he then met Mullah Chula. He says that I was a Qadi at the time. Now, with Mullah Chula having learned what he did, he comes to said Muhammad al-Shushtari, and he says, look, you know, it's not for you to be a Qadi. There's damnation within this. So Shushtari thought, you know, what's he talking about? There was a case that had come, and that case was of a yatim. It was to do with Mala the yatim. So he said, Jula comes again to him and says, look, you know, there's damnation in this, remember, to take the right of an orphan. And he was really kind of freaked out, perplexed. And in the moment where he was really thinking what the solution was, Mullah Chula again came. He says, go to so-and-so place, dig it up. Under the ground there is this kid's inheritance. Once that was found, Shushtari takes a step back. He says, look, from today onwards, I'm not going to be a Qadi. He comes to Jula, says, who are you? Jula says, I'll teach. Take the liquor, 40 days come back to me. 40 days came back. He says, I want you to pack everything up, go to Najaf. In 6 months' time, you'll see me for the final time in Wadi al-Salam. So Muhammad al-Shushtari says that in Wadi al-Salam, I saw him for the final time. He gave me something. And that opened up my entire basira. I could see everything after that. Chula disappeared, never to come back again. He says, but then I taught. And I taught Khuli Hamadani. And he taught Ahmad al-Karbalai. And he taught Sayyid Ali Qadhi Marhum. And that's the whole line that came down from that. So look, the reason why I'm saying this is, you perfect yourself, you raise your own standards, and you'll see that help comes from the ghaib. You don't need to go and sit next to some peer sahab. That peer sahab probably needs help. You go and gain taqwa. You see, Allah will help you. So look, the reason why I mention all of this is, as a disclaimer, that just because somebody has an ability doesn't necessarily mean that they can guide you in this field. The biggest guide that you have is your Risala Amaliyah. Come to know yourself, work on your akhlaq. Slowly Allah will open up the pathway for you. So look, there's one more thing I want to mention here. Because it is Akhir al-Zaman, the best things that we can do, and to put it forward, two things, and I want to consolidate quickly, go through this because we don't have much time. I raised an issue a number of days ago. We were discussing this about seven huquq that a brother has for another brother, or a sister has for another sister, from the believers. I want to quickly go through that. Seven things are this. Either we apply these seven things, otherwise we're outside of the wilayah of Allah. And though I was thinking not to mention it because ignorance is bliss, but I want to make your life difficult, so let's mention it anyway. Three of them are to do with this. It is incumbent on you to go and visit your brother when you're sick. But visiting your brother or sister when they're sick doesn't mean that you sit there for an hour or half an hour. No, go quickly, see them and come, as you know an ill person. If you're going to sit there trying to crack jokes or talk to that poor person who's already sick, it's probably going to aggravate a sickness. So when the tradition says go in visiting somebody sick, it doesn't mean just sit there for 2 hours or 1 hour. It means go see them, give them your dua, and go away. One thing. Second thing, if that person is to die, it is incumbent that you attend his janazah. And thirdly, you never mention anything negative after he's died or she's died. Always only positively. Three things from the seven. So those things are easy. You can do that. Now coming to the four things which are difficult. First, what you want for yourself, want for your brother. And if you're not clean bold on that, now look at the second one. In fact, I'll leave the second one for the end. So I'll put another second one in. This is the second one. If your brother ever comes to you and they're financially in strife, or ever comes to you for help, it is incumbent upon you whatever potential you have to be able to help them. If you can help them this much. If you can help them that much. Only you can gauge that. And remember, if Allah asks you on the Day of Judgment, or if Amir al-Mu'mineen asks you on the Day of Judgment, or at the moment of your death, if he asks you, your potential was here and you only get that much, that's up to you, your consciousness. What else? It is haram for you to backbite about your brother. So you cannot backbite at all. Talk negatively even if it's true, because backbiting is not slander. Slander means you make things up or you go on a run. Backbiting is categorically the fact that that person has a deficiency. You clocked them, you saw them, as they say. Clock, as they say in South London, you clocked them doing something not so good. And they realized you clocked them. And they felt embarrassed. It's haram for you to reveal it. That takes our count even further now. So look, let me give you one more then. And that's sufficient. And that's this. You should never harbor negativity in your heart for your brother. That's very hard. Actually, no, that's not very hard. You know why? Firstly, the reason why I shouldn't harbor negativity is because negativity breeds negativity. I'll give you an example. Have you noticed sometimes after a very long time when you go and see someone, nothing has happened between you and them, but there's a negativity in your heart? It's because that person's feeling the negativity. This is why the believer, if you want to know your maqam in the eyes of somebody else, look into your own heart and see what your maqam is, or what their maqam is in your heart. That's how you can reciprocate it. And that also applies with God as well. When somebody wants to ask the Imam, how do I know what my maqam is in the eyes of Allah? Well, look inside of yourself and see. If you can stop and leave everything for the sake of Allah, then Allah will leave everything for you. Is it difficult? Of course it is. You know, somebody messaged to say, how do we take out negativity? Actually, remember something. Don't hate a person. Look at the negative quality and hate that. Learn to free your heart of negativity for somebody. Why? Because it's attached to the ego. Somebody's wronged you, okay. But when you let it go, you notice letting it go, you feel so much lighter, you feel so much more at ease. Don't ever sleep at night time where you have negativity for somebody. Leave it to Allah, and Allah is the best of hakims. So look, that on one side. In the next 2 minutes or so, I just want to say one more thing, and then we bring it to a close. And that's this. What becomes important in this time and day and age, especially with COVID-19, is to give sadaqah. Sadaqah, according to a tradition, has six benefits. Some say it has seven benefits. Three of them in the hereafter, which I won't mention because we don't have time. Three or four in this world, very quickly. Firstly, it removes bala. COVID-19 is a bala. So every day, try and give sadaqah. And remember, when something inflicts a lot of people, then the concentration of dua also dilutes unless if it's communal. The best example that we have is in the time of Jonah. The people of Jonah communally prayed for Allah to remove the bala that was coming on them. Second thing though, then it requires for you to give more sadaqah, or do a qurbani, or to feed the poor, and that's very powerful. So with dua you have to supplement it, because it's a waba that's gone all over. So you pray, you feed the poor, and you give sadaqah. So what, number one, sadaqah removes bala. Two, it increases your life, sadaqah does. Three, increases your risk. And four, removes illnesses. And that's my time come to an end. I want to give you a small story. Many years ago, as you know, because we're unable to travel, I'm currently in Edinburgh, in Scotland. This is where we're beaming from. Many years ago in Scotland, I met a couple. This is going back about 7 years. The couple were two doctors, husband and wife. They didn't live in Edinburgh, they lived outside, closer to the Highlands. And when I met the gentleman, we were on Hajj together. He said to me, my wife and I couldn't have any children. We were married for 10 years. We were married for 10 years. We couldn't have children. We went to every ziyarah that we could think of. But we found that our prayer wasn't answered. 10 days of Muharram came. And he said to me, look, you know, we couldn't get to any mosque. We used to go on the internet. We used to watch live majalis. So though we're all suffering today in terms of the fact that we can't be together, but there are many people who live in remote parts of the country who are unable to get here. And so they listen to live majalis. Says that the 9th of Muharram came. And my wife said to me, look, we've tried everything. When the majlis finishes, the cradle of Ali Asghar comes. She says, why don't we just sincerely do tawassul to Sayyid al-Shuhada because of this Bab al-Hawaij, let's see what happens. Time comes, cradle comes out, husband and wife held hands, they look towards the screen. They say, Sayyid al-Shuhada, we've gone to every single door, all the doors were closed on us. Today we've come to the cradle, your Ali Asghar. Please fulfill. Please fulfill a hajat. This doctor says to me, he says, a week later, I went to the surgery. My wife called me and she said to me, I'm pregnant. And they had a son. The next time when I went to Karbala, this man cried when he came to that maqam where Ali Akbar was hit on the neck. He bawled his eyes out, the guy was hitting his head. Why? Because he knew now what it feels to have a child. What Hussein must have been going through. I can hear a baby crying. Just edit this out. And just mentally prepare yourself. This is one of the hardest masaib to listen to. The irony of it is that today a baby stops crying and we can hear that there's a baby crying. Ya Allah. I feel that's from Imam Hussein. Just to tell you how innocent babies are. Imagine Eliezer would have been crying like that until that moment came. And he would have been speaking in his own language to his father. Can we continue, or is there a room there where they can go just in case, because otherwise it might mess up? Are we good to go? In the room? Okay. In the room? See, these masaib are heavy. And this night is very heavy. You know, you think to yourself that a woman who all of her life wanted to have children, and the two children she had, both of them were taken away from her. You know what she says when she comes for Arba'in? As she comes for Arba'in, Rabab, this is. She comes from Arba'in. She starts doing the tawaf of Sayyidu Shuhada's grave. And after that, when it's time to go, she looks towards Imam Sajjad and says, "Son, leave me here." Says, "Why, mother?" Says, "What have I got to go home to? My daughter's resting in Damascus. My son and husband are here. What am I going to go back home to, son?" Ask that mother what she feels tonight. Look, tonight the cradle of Eliezer is going to come out. I promise you, this young son of Hussein is Babul Hawaj. You know, every mother has something in her heart that she says, "I want my son to grow up to be something." On the 9th of Muharram, perhaps this mother was saying, "I want my Eliezer to become like Abbas." Allah made both of them Babul Hawaj. Look, if I can recite, and I'm going to recite slowly. It's difficult. It's difficult to recite this. Look, I still remember a time in Qom when an Indian student had a small child and he went to Bimaristan Gulpaygani. When he came back, the child had died. We saw him walking from the door of his house to the end of the road. He was walking one way, walking back again, walking one way, walking back again. So we asked him, we said, "Why don't you go in the house?" You know what he said? He said, "When my wife gave me the child was Salim. Now the child is dead. I don't know what to say to this mother who's inside waiting for me to come back with a live baby." If I can recite. Ninth of Muharram comes. Mothers are talking to their sons. Sayyidu Shuhada is going from one tent to one tent to one tent. Eventually he comes in front of a tent and he listens in. What does he hear? He hears a mother speaking to her six-month-old baby. You know what that mother's saying? She's saying, "Eliezer, you're too small, son. I wish I could have presented something tomorrow as well. But Eliezer, know something. I know that you're going to go into the battlefield. Eliezer, one thing. I'm not from Banu Hashim. Please don't get scared in any way that tomorrow people are going to say it was my milk that reacted like this." The day of Ashura comes. Asr time comes. They say one gharib man looks to the right, looks to the left, and gives one cry. He says, "Hal min Nasir." He says, "Is there anyone to help me?" After that he says, "Is there anyone to protect the haram of Rasulullah?" They say at that moment, all of the women start to cry. Sayyidul Shuhada looks and he says, "Why are the women crying in my lifetime?"
Sayyidah Zainab comes and she says, your young son, when you said that is there anyone to protect the haram of Rasulullah, chucked himself out of the cradle. Sayyidul Shuhada walks in. He knows now what time it is. Lifts up the son and he says to the mother, could you go outside? I want to prepare my son to take my son into the maqtal. Why? Because you never prepare a son for his death if the mother is there. Mother goes into the other tent. Sayyidul Shuhada says to Sayyidah Zainab, bring me a white cloth. She brings that cloth. Sayyidul Shuhada puts the small baby like he would do in a coffin, wraps the coffin around. As he wraps the coffin, lifts up the baby. Hussein is Shafiq. Therefore, he hides the baby under the abba. Why? Because he didn't want the son to hit the baby. Hussein loves his son. Yazidis say, when Mukhtar asked, he said, when did you feel sorry for Hussein? The reply came, it broke our heart. All of us started to cry. When Hussein was bringing something under his abba, we thought it was the Quran, but when he took it out, it was a small baby there. Hussein, when he presented the baby, it was like a fish out of water. He would open his mouth like a fish does and close it and open it and close it. We could tell Hussein was mazloom because this child was thirsty. Hussein then turns around and says, if you think that I'm going to drink this water, you feed the baby yourself. He says that when I put the child on the ground, Hussein puts the child on the ground, he lifts up that child again. At that moment, Umar ibn Sa'ad gives the hukum. So Shimmer, go and call Hurmala. Mukhtar asked Hurmala. He said, Hurmala, what did you do on the day of Ashura? He did 3 arrows. He says, one of those arrows was when I fired it at the neck of Hussein's small baby. He said, what happened there? He said, I came forward and I took a 3-pronged arrow, the same arrow that you used to knock a horse down. He says, when I lifted that up to fire the arrow, in the tradition it says he dropped it once. Again he lifts it, drops it twice. The third time Umar ibn Sa'ad comes to Hurmala, says, Hurmala, if somebody asked me who the most wretched, hard-hearted person in my whole army was, I would have said it's you. What's the problem? Why can't you shoot down this young baby? He replies, he says, Umar ibn Sa'ad, I want to shoot this arrow, but every time I want to fire the arrow, a woman dressed in black comes to me and says, Hurmala, don't you have any children of your own that you're killing my son? If I can narrate this, Hurmala fires the arrow. The arrow goes into the sky. You know what the hadith says? Hadith says, from this ear to this ear, the arrow went straight through. As the arrow went straight from one ear to one ear, blood came out, came into the hands of Sayyidul Shuhada. Hussein wants to put it in the sky. The sky rejects it. The ground rejects it. Hadith says, old father rubs the blood of Ali Asghar onto his white beard. And as he rubs it, he begins to walk. And as he begins to walk, he begins to recite, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un, ridhan bi qadaihi wa tasliman lah. As Sayyidul Shuhada walks back with his baby, you know what the tradition says? A 4-year-old girl comes running. She says, father, did my brother drink any water? Sayyidul Shuhada goes, Rabab comes out, both of them dig. They put the small baby behind the tent. They fill it with dirt. Sayyidul Shuhada says, I've heard from my grandfather, it's mustahab, some water should go there. Rabab begins to cry. The tears fall on the... Look, I can't narrate it. You won't be able to take it. One final thing I'll say though, forgive me for saying this. 11th of Muharram comes, 71 heads are hoisted on a spear. One person comes to Umar ibn Sa'd, says Umar ibn Sa'd, there were 72 shuhada, one head is missing. Says, where is that head? I saw Hussein go to the back of the tent. He was burying someone at the back of the tent. At that moment, Umar ibn Sa'd says, four horse riders, find this body. One mother chained, arms tied behind her back. Arms tied, looking at the body of Hussein. Look at... They began to hit the spears on the ground. A time came. The spear goes into the ground. Small baby comes up. Head was dangling. Shimmer walks forward, cuts the small head. Rabab falls on the ground. Mother knows.
Meru Bab, Meru Bab, O Our Lady, O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Our Lady, O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Our Lady, O Meru Bab. Merobab, O Our Lady, O Merobab. You see that infant head on the spear, and how it's slaughtered from ear to ear. You see that infant head on the spear, and how it's slaughtered from ear to ear. He is my baby, Ali Asghar. He is my baby, Ali Asghar. His shahada is inqilab. O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Our Lady, O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Our Lady, O Meru Bab. You feel the tremors rising again. It is the final breath of Hussein. You feel the tremors rising again. It is the final breath of Hussein. He is my Aqa, the son of Zahra. He is my Aqa, the son of Zahra. He is Allah's intikhab. O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Our Lady, O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Our Lady, O Meru Bab. You hear this angel weeping alone. Her cries of Baba challenge the throne. You hear this angel weeping alone. Her cries of Baba challenge the throne. She is Sakina, my little princess. She is Sakina, my little princess. Her Sahara is Bhutarab. O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Our Lady, O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Meru Bab, O Our Lady, O Meru Bab. O not a single moment of calm from the streets of the Kufa to Sham. Oh, not a single moment of calm from the streets of Kufa to Sham. Oh, can you see us, oh our Shia? Oh, can you see us, oh our Shia? at the mercy of every mob. Omer O Bab, Omer O Bab, O Our Lady, Omer O Bab, Omer O Bab, Omer O Bab, O Our Lady, Omer O Bab. You smell the fragrance of Mustafa in the tears I've been shedding, Salah. You smell the fragrance of Mustafa in the tears I've been shedding, Salah. With every manzil, with every moment, with every manzil, with every moment, he is aging in his shabab. Umer O Bab, Umer O Bab, O Our Lady, Umer O Bab, Umer O Bab, Umer O Bab, O Our Lady, Umer O Bab. O for your noble resistance, Hussein, I would offer my two kids again. Oh, for your noble resistance, Hussein, I would offer my two kids again. But for your trampled, unshrouded body, but for your trampled, unshrouded body, I will stand under the sun and sob. Omer O Bab, Omer O Bab, O Our Lady, Omer O Bab, Omer O Bab, Omer O Bab, O Our Lady, Omer O Bab.
Yo say. JazakAllah, Brother Nihal, thank you so much for participating in our programs in the past 10 days, 9 days. At this time, I would like to request Brother Nihal Mustafa to recite an Adha. Brother Nihal Mustafa.
Surna, Al Minna Sayyan Surna.
This concludes our English program for today. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Inshallah, just to give you an overview for our program tomorrow. Inshallah, our virtual program for Yawm-e Ashura will start with Azan-e Ali Akbar at 5:30 a.m., followed by Mercia Majlis. This Majlis will be in Urdu. The Amal will start at 10 a.m., inshallah, which will be led by our respected resident Alim, Sheikh Abdul Jalil Ali. And the Amal will be followed by English Majlis at 11:30, inshallah. We hope that inshallah you all can join us tomorrow as well for our virtual program. For future inshallah, for upcoming post-Ashura programs, if anyone would like to recite Basic Issa, please contact Mullah Jaffer. And inshallah, the Urdu program tonight will be streamed live at 9 p.m. With that, I would like to request whether Ali Rasa Jaffi to say salam.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بثنائي عليك مني جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقي وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم. Everybody together. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين وعلى أختك بالفضل العباس وعلى أختك الحوراء زينب جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته. السلام عليك يا ابن رسول الله، السلام عليك يا ابن محمد حبيب الله، السلام عليك يا ابن أمير المؤمنين علي بن أبي طالب، السلام عليك يا ابن فاطمة الزهراء سيدتي نساء العالمين، السلام عليك يا حسن المجتبى، السلام عليكم يا أهل بيت النبوة، السلام عليكم جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته. السلام عليك يا تسعة المعصومين من ذرية الحسين عليه السلام، السلام عليكم جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته. السلام عليك يا مولاي يا صاحب العصر والزمان، السلام عليك يا شريك القرآن، السلام عليك يا إمامي وإمام الإنس والجان، سيدي أجل الله تعالى فرجك وسهل الله تعالى مخرجك وظهورك
وجعلنا من خيار أنصارك وأعوانك، وجعلنا من المستشهدين بين يديك ومحبينك. السلام عليكم جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.